Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C. And we now, as of Saturday, have all three branches of our government that are completely illegitimate. None, for the first time in American history, none of our branches of government reflect a majority of the voting population. Now, you might rightfully say to me, Mark, our government wasn't democratic until the 1960s, in which case I would certainly agree. At the beginning of our founding, it was only white Christian men who owned property who could vote in the various states. When the Constitution was formed with the First Amendment, it became just white men with property. Then Andrew Jackson came along, and it became all white men, even those that didn't own property. A step forward. Then, of course, with Abraham Lincoln, supposedly black men were given the right to vote. And I say supposedly because we all know that it didn't really happen that way. That even though black people were given the right to vote for a very limited period of time, they lost that right to vote with Jim Crow laws and wouldn't get it back again until the 1960s. Of course, women were not allowed the right to vote until the 19th Amendment. That's right, the 19th Amendment in 1920. So we did better. And then by the 1960s, by the time of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, the Voting Rights Act of 1965, finally, all of the American population could choose their leaders. We've now gone backward. We have never had a time in American history where every single one of our institutions was illegitimate, which start, of course, with the presidency. Now, the United States president, as we all know, is chosen by this anachronistic system called the Electoral College. The Electoral College really was the idea of the founders not to have direct democracy. They didn't even trust all white men with property. They had to vote for electors who would then choose the president of the United States. It's completely anachronistic. No other system of government has it. And it leads oftentimes to the wrong result. It has led 5 times in American history to the wrong result, to the result not chosen by the majority of the American people, not even by the plurality of the American people. And, of course, Donald Trump was America's second choice. The United States of America, those that voted in the election of 2016, we all know, chose Hillary Clinton by almost 3 million votes. Donald Trump wasn't just the second choice, he was solidly the second choice. In fact, Hillary Clinton's lead over Donald Trump was not only bigger than Gore's lead over Bush, it was bigger than Kennedy's lead, or Nixon's lead, or Jimmy Carter's lead. In fact, it was one of the largest leads after Obama and Bill Clinton in the last half century. But she didn't get to be president because of this quirk, this weird anachronism in our Constitution. And, of course, I am devoted to getting rid of the Electoral College. At some point in this broadcast, I'll tell you how I plan to help work on that. I've actually already started. But, okay, the president wasn't chosen by the American people. What about Congress? Well, Congress has 2 branches, the Senate and the House of Representatives. The Senate never has represented the American people. At its start, the Senate was chosen by state legegislatures. Now, since about 100 years ago, it has been directly elected by the people of the various states. But that doesn't mean it's democratic. Of course not. 2 senators represent every state in the United States. There's 37 million people of California get 2 senators. And the 500,000 people of Wyoming get 2 senators. In fact, the people of Wyoming have 66 times more power than your average Californian. Well, that's not fair. That's not democratic. That's not legitimate. And it never was. Unfortunately, by the way, that's one of the things we can't amend in the United States Constitution. We specifically are not allowed to amend every state's equal right to two senators. We would have to, well, throw out our Constitution and get a brand new one, which we've done before. We did it with the Articles of Confederation, of course, so it's not out of the question. But the Senate's never been Democratic. Nevertheless, because of the filibuster rule, which is also not in the Constitution, that 60-vote standard meant that by the time 60 senators agreed on something, it usually represented at least a majority of the American population. So that fixed the fact that the Senate was not a majority institution to some extent. What about the House of Representatives? Well, the House of Representatives, I think we all know, is terribly gerrymandered, mostly by Republicans and a couple states by Democrats, but the vast majority of it is gerrymandered by Republicans. And in states like Pennsylvania and Ohio and Michigan, Florida, we have states like Pennsylvania, where the Democrats would win the majority of the congressional votes in 1 year, but Republicans would still have three-quarters of the seats, two-thirds, three-quarters of the seats. Well, that's not Democratic. So the House of Representatives doesn't represent the American people, even though they call it the House of Representatives. In the most current election, by the way, the Democrats did lose to the Republicans by about 0.9%. So by all rights, the House of Representatives would have maybe 219, 220 Republicans. There'd be 216 or 217 Democrats. Instead, it's 241 to 194. And that ain't democracy, my friends. And now we get to the United States Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court is chosen by the president and confirmed by the United States Senate. Now, in the vast majority of cases, the president is the one chosen by the American people. As noted, there are only five times in American history where more people have chosen another candidate than have chosen the president, the person that became president. Two, of course, in the last 16 years. There is the case of 1824. Frankly, we don't really know the popular vote in that case, but it's probably likely that Andrew Jackson did beat John Quincy Adams, although there were four candidates. It's kind of hard to tell. But in any case, whatever you think of John Quincy Adams, his candidates for the Supreme Court were approved by at least 80% of the Senate. Go to 1876, the classic disputed race of Rutherford B. Hayes and Samuel Tilden. They used to call him Rutherfraud B. Hayes. There was a huge, huge disagreement over his election. But Rutherford B. Hayes, Supreme Court justices, were all approved by at least 80% of the Senate. The same is true for Benjamin Harrison, who won the electoral vote but not the popular vote in 1888. Fast forward to the 21st century, because there weren't any in the 20th century, we have George Bush. Now, George Bush did not win in 2000. Frankly, he didn't win the popular vote. He shouldn't have won the electoral vote. All the Supreme Court had to do was count all the votes, and Gore would have been president because Gore won the majority of the citizens of Florida. Just that's enough. Gore should have been president. Part of the problems with having unelected Supreme Court is when they can start choosing unelected presidents like George Bush. But at least George Bush didn't have any Supreme Court justices in his first term. All of his justices were in his second term. And in 2004, George Bush was chosen by more Americans than John Kerry. So to be fair, prior to these last two justices, every single Supreme Court justice in all of American history was chosen by either a president who won the popular vote, or, for the few presidents that hadn't, by at least 80% of the United States Senate. That didn't happen with Neil Gorsuch, and it certainly didn't happen with Brett Kavanaugh. For those two judges, the only justices, the only time in all of American history, they were rejected by a majority of the president, of the people who voted for president, and the majority of the people who voted for the Senate. And we all know Donald Trump was rejected, but even Neil Gorsuch, who got 53 senators' votes, those 53 senators represent only 45% of the American population. In Kavanaugh's case, we're down to about 42%. the vast majority of Americans did not want Kavanaugh or Gorsuch on the court or the president who appointed him. Now, what does that mean? I know the first thing someone's going to say is, well, our Constitution, Mark, says that can happen. And that's true. It's also true that the British system of government said that King George III could rule over us and tax us without representation. But we revolted against George III. We said there shouldn't be taxation without representation. And indeed, in the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson said, governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. And whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. That's in our Declaration of Independence. In other words, even our founders, and let's face it, Thomas Jefferson owned slaves, and women couldn't vote, and certainly slaves couldn't vote. So it's not about the man, it's about what he wrote. And what he wrote was that all men are created equal. Today we'd say all men and women are created equal. That's what he wrote. That's our foundational document. And when we don't have the consent of the government is not legitimate. For the first time in American history, none of our three branches of government are legitimate. And the next time the United States Supreme Court has a 5-4 decision in which two of those five are Kavanaugh and Gorsuch, well, the decision was wrongly decided because of the seven rightfully appointed justices, the seven justices that are from we the people, not the two that are from some tyranny of the minority, would have ruled the other way. So the next time there's a 5-4 decision, let's all remember that decision is wrongly decided. It does not reflect the American people. And to the extent we can avoid doing it, we should avoid doing it. Just like we threw tea in the Boston Harbor. Now, you know, when you practice civil disobedience, you sometimes go to jail. Let's face it, when people stood up against Soviet dictatorships or Nazi dictatorships, they were often mistreated, to say the least. And we're not there yet. But we have to remember what is legitimate and what is not. And right now, our federal government is illegitimate. And it's going to take a supermajority of us to get our country back. And that's what we're going to have to do in November. Call in if you like, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. We'll be right back right after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin. It really has not been remarked on much by the political classes. I posted an op-ed about this. You can read about it at Blue Virginia. I did, by the way, write the Washington Post, New York Times. They didn't take my op-ed. But what does it say when we don't have a government that reflects the American people? Again, to be fair, we didn't have slaves voting, we didn't have blacks voting, we didn't have women voting for a very long time in our history. We didn't have people without property voting in the first part of the American history. But at least of those that could vote, their choices were always reflected in at least one branch of government. Almost always it was the presidency, but in those few cases where it wasn't, if it wasn't the Senate, at least it was the House of Representatives. And in none of those cases, if those weren't working, we had the Supreme Court. Now, none of the branches are democratic. So let's be frank. The United States, as of Saturday, is no longer a democracy. We're not. We're no longer a republic. We have a tyranny of the minority. Right now, we have a government of the minority, by the minority, and for the minority. The particular minority being extremely rich, white, male, straight Christians, in this case. That's who they're fighting for. And only them. And that would actually be okay with, I mean, it wouldn't be okay with me, but it would be democratic, it would be legitimate if they were voted in. But they weren't. Again, the American people rejected Donald Trump. The American people rejected Republican control of the Senate. In the House, to be fair, the 2016 election, the Republicans should control it by a 3-vote margin instead of a 50-vote margin. Though in 2012, it was the opposite. In 2012, the Democrats got more votes in the House of Representatives than the Republicans, but the Republicans still controlled it by 40 votes due to gerrymandering. Gerrymandering, of course, comes from state legislatures. And the only way to fix the gerrymandering in the United States House of Representatives is to vote in state legislators who oppose gerrymandering. And because it's so overwhelmingly total Republicans, if you don't want gerrymandering, if you believe that government should be of the people, by the people, and for the people, you got to vote for Democrats up and down the ballot. Congress, Senate, House, governor. State legislatures. Please don't forget state legislatures. And I don't just say that because I'm a sitting member of the Virginia House of Delegates. They're the ones who decide the boundaries. The House does not reflect the American people. And now the Supreme Court doesn't either. And that's really scary. Because we all know that the United States Supreme Court is not just about majority rule. It's about minority rights. We depend on the United States Supreme Court to declare laws unconstitutional, particularly when they violate individual rights, basic human freedoms, the right to due process, so you're not thrown in prison without getting a trial, the right to freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of assembly, the right not to be searched without a warrant, the right not to be tortured, the right to a jury trial. All of these, the right to counsel if you are criminally accused, all of these are in the Bill of Rights. There are many other rights. But the whole point is the reason we have federal judges is to protect us against the tyranny of the majority. But we now have something much, much worse than the tyranny of the majority. We have the tyranny of the minority. We have the American people saying, we don't want this president, we don't want this Congress, we don't want this Senate, and we don't want this House, and we don't want this Supreme Court. And we're not getting what we want. We are no longer a democracy. Don't let anyone tell you the United States leads the democratic nations. We are not a democracy, and we're not even a republic. Don't give me that distinction. In a republic, the representatives represent the people. But our representatives don't represent the people. The House of Representatives is not representative. The Senate is not representative. The President is not. Neither is the court. We do not have a legitimate government. And according to Thomas Jefferson, when you don't have the consent of the government, you have a right to alter or abolish your government. Thomas Jefferson would no doubt call for revolution in this case. But it's not necessary. If we vote in supermajorities, and it requires supermajorities, it will require 55, 56%, we can actually take our country back this November and once again, hopefully, become a democracy again. But don't let anybody tell you the United States is a free country. We are not. We are ruled by the tyranny of the minority, the tyranny of the Republican Party. This is Mark Levine. I'll be right back right after this.
Back to the aggressive progressive, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Insights. I'm your host, Mark Levine. In all the discussion, the important discussion, the necessary discussion about how terrible it is that Kavanaugh's on the court, we are going to continue to talk about, I talked on Thursday, about the pain of the survivors of sexual violence and domestic violence, and how hard it is for them to come out, and how Republicans are now encouraging rape victims to just take it, just suffer, never talk. Because, well, let's face it, a lot of Republicans are afraid, I guess, of the sexual assaults they've committed, or at least that they may commit. I don't know. You'll have to ask them. I don't know why they want to make it so easy for people to get away with being sexual predators. I suspect it's not because Republicans love rape so much as it is that they're willing to just ride roughshod over the backs of American women and victims, survivors of domestic violence, sexual violence, just to take power. In essence, that's who they are. What's left of the Republican Party? There aren't any principles. God knows it ain't small government, right? Because they're supporting massive defense spending and massive surveillance. It's not low budget. Donald Trump is giving us the biggest debt and biggest deficit we've had since the time of World War II, mostly for tax cuts for very wealthy people. But it's not trade. Republicans, used to believe in free trade. They don't anymore. It's not immigration. George Bush used to support immigrants coming here. Now we have a party that hates immigrants. I mean, there is no Republican Party except power. The one thing Republicans all agree on is Republicans want power, and they're willing to trample our Constitution, our laws, and our democratic institutions in order to get there. We all know in 2016, for the first time in all of American history, in 227 years of American history, there has never been, prior to 2016, a United States president that was not allowed to nominate a Supreme Court justice. It's never happened before. Every single other presidential nominee was nominated, and unless the president withdrew that nominee was given a hearing by the Senate. The vast majority of cases, they were voted on positively. In a few cases, they were rejected. But every single president got to choose a nominee. Mitch McConnell changed the standard in 2016. He said, I don't care who Barack Obama appoints to the United States Supreme Court. I don't care who they are. We will not allow this democratically elected president to exercise his right under the Constitution to choose a Supreme Court nominee. Nope. None. He gets none. Screw the Constitution. I don't give a damn about the Constitution. We want power. Now, that had never been done before. Ever. And no doubt he has set a precedent. From this time forward, there will never be another United States Supreme Court justice appointed with a president and a senator of different parties. If the Democrats win the Senate, we're not appointing another one. And if we get the presidency and they win the Senate, they're not confirming another one. And that's a new standard in American history. We may go down from 8 to 7 to 6 to 5 to 3 justices and have none on the court because of the new Mitch McConnell standard. Now, if Democrats were just a tiny bit as power-hungry as Republicans, we wouldn't be in this situation. Back in 1992, when George Bush Sr. was president, the Democrats controlled the United States Senate. And Clarence Thomas, even though anyone who studied it knew that he had sexually harassed Anita Hill, came through. And even the Democrats who controlled the Senate Judiciary Committee didn't want him on. But they decided to let it go to the Senate floor, and no one filibustered. And he got through 52 to 48. This was right before George Bush ended his presidency. If they'd merely waited the 14 months that Mitch McConnell would wait for Merrick Garland, Bill Clinton would have been president. We would have had a 5-4 liberal majority on the United States Supreme Court. And then when 2000 came around, what you think about this, when 2000 came around, that 5-4 part of the Supreme Court would have said, let the voters decide who's president. We in robes shouldn't decide. Let the voters decide who's president. Al Gore would be president in 2000. And if Al Gore had been president in 2000, we would get two more liberal justices. And then Obama, and we'd have a full 9-vote liberal justices. Now, I can't say. Maybe people would have changed their minds with Al Gore being president. But the point was, because Democrats played fairly and actually allowed the Clarence Thomas decision to go to the floor for a vote, even though they controlled the Senate, not only did Republicans continue to control the United States Supreme Court with some horrible decisions like Citizens United, the right of shadowy foreign billionaires to put tons of money into our elections and control our government the way Russia does today, the way the Koch brothers do today. They don't all have to be foreign. All of that is because we were fair. And the only reason George Bush was president is because the Democrats were fair to the Republicans in 1992. So we have this problem as Democrats. They play hardball and then they try to bring the country together. If you were playing Monopoly and you're winning and you go to the bathroom and you come back out of the bathroom and you find that you've lost two-thirds of your money and half your properties, and the guy that you're playing with says, "Sorry, Mark, while you were in the bathroom, I kept rolling because you were gone, and I won all this money, and, you know, I know it's bad, but let's get over it. Let's heal. We have to heal. Let's keep playing. Only now I have all the money, and I have the hotels, and you don't, and let's move on. Let's not think about the fact that while you were in the bathroom, I took your property, and I took your money, and I didn't follow the rules. That's old news. Let's all get along." What would you do? Flip over the game? Say, "Screw you"? I mean, fights have been started over less than that. Would you keep playing? Fortunately, we have to keep playing. Because while the Republicans are playing games and doing coup d'etats and power plays and violating the rule of law and making America, as they have, into no longer a democracy, this is the only country we have. And we're the majority. And if they're going to rip away our democracy, don't let them come to us and say, "Can't we all get along now?" Right? Someone comes and they kill your child. And then they say, "You know what? We really should let bygones be bygones." No. The Republicans have declared war on the United States of America. They've declared war on our democracy, on our republic, on our Constitution, on our rule of law. The Supreme Court is illegitimate. Its decisions don't matter except for the fact that they have power to enforce them. Now, you have to respect power sometimes, but you have to always know it's not legitimate. I went to the former Soviet Union, back when there was a Soviet Union, and I hereby confess I broke Soviet laws. And I broke Soviet laws because I knew that I didn't respect them. They weren't chosen by the country. They weren't chosen by the people of the Soviet Union. It wasn't a democratic country. To be fair, I only did what I thought I could get away with. I didn't break more laws than I thought I could get away with. If I had, I'd be in a Soviet jail. I would take the punishment of this illegitimate system. And so I'm not advocating that people go out and break American laws. But we should recognize that our government is entirely illegitimate. Our Congress, our President, and our Supreme Court. We shouldn't respect the law. We have to be careful lest we go to jail. But once you know you're not in legitimate government, that gives you freedom to act. That gives you freedom to admit, yes, the President, of course, is a con artist and a criminal. And the Republicans in charge deserve no respect whatsoever, none, because they weren't chosen by the American people. And as Thomas Jefferson told us, if you don't have the consent of the governed, you're not a legitimate government. So don't blame me, blame Jefferson. Now, how do we get it back? We get it back through elections, which still can't exist in America for the time being. Now, if we don't exercise our rights, we may well lose them. And I fully admit, we're going to need 55% to take the House. I think we'll get it. We're going to need far more than that to take the Senate. It's only a third of the seats. They're mostly Republican seats. It's not going to be easy, folks. But the wrong way out, as always, is despair. That's the wrong way out. It's recognizing the fact that our government's not legitimate. You may note that I don't think I've ever said the word president followed by the word Trump. He's not my president. He wasn't chosen by the majority of the American people. I don't respect him. I don't respect the institution of the president until and unless it's chosen by the people. In the Senate, in the Congress, the Senate, the vast majority of Americans voted for Democratic senators, not Republican senators. So whatever the Senate does is illegitimate. The House, due to its gerrymander, is also illegitimate, and now the United States Supreme Court. Now, this you might think is radical stuff, and yet all I'm saying is the facts. We've just never been in that situation before. So what do we do about it other than complain bitterly? Well, we go one piece by piece. For the presidents, we start with the Electoral College. At best, it's an anachronism. At worst, it is an attack on our freedom. It is an attack on democracy. It is not. It's an attack on we the people. We have to get rid of the Electoral College. But how do we do that? Well, you'd say, well, Mark, a constitutional amendment, right? That's how you change it. Except a constitutional amendment requires two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate, both of which aren't Democratic, and three-quarters of state legislatures. And that would include some small states that do very well on the Electoral College. Wyoming, both Dakotas. Why do we have two Dakotas? I mean, we could just have Dakota, and the population of just Dakota, North and South, would still be less than Northern Virginia. Way. Los Angeles has 9 times the people of both Dakotas put together. But it is what it is. We have the system we have. How do we change the Electoral College on the current system? Well, there are end runs around it. I'm working on one in Virginia. If you don't know about it, it's called the National Popular Vote. It's a compact among states to deliver their electoral votes to the candidate who wins the United States National Popular Vote. Think about it. It really doesn't matter, as long as states that total 270, a majority electoral college, as long as those states agree, we don't have to care what the other states do. Only 16 states have 270 electoral votes between them. And if we could get those or some mixture of smaller states to agree that the winner of those states' electoral votes all go to the candidate who wins the popular vote, we've done it. We've amended the Constitution without amending the Constitution. We have gotten rid of the Electoral College merely through state legislatures. And here's the good news. We need 270 electoral votes to do this. States totaling 173 electoral votes have already done it. We only need 97 electoral votes more. I am co-patroning this bill in Virginia. I'll introduce it. And if it's not otherwise introduced, that's 13 electoral votes more. That'll take us down to 84, and you can do it in your home state. California's done it. New York's done it. Illinois's done it. Find out if your home state has supported the national popular vote. We can end these undemocratic presidents we've been having. What about Congress? Well, the House, we've got to end gerrymandering. The United States Supreme Court almost ended gerrymandering. And then they didn't, because Republicans are in control and Anthony Kennedy was a Republican. Remember, the United States Supreme Court hasn't ruled based on the law in many, many years. This is purely politics. And certainly the right-wingers on the court don't act according to law. Justice Scalia never acted according to law. He acted because he wanted to impose his particular Catholic theology on all of us. I've talked about that in prior shows on the air when I used to debate, when I did once debate. Justice Antonin Scalia in person. But the point is, this is a total power play. How do we stop gerrymandering? We got to start, again, go back to our state legislatures. Our state legislatures can undo gerrymandering, or the courts, state courts, can undo gerrymandering. In Pennsylvania, state court undid gerrymandering. In Florida, the people of Florida undid gerrymandering. In California, the people undid gerrymandering. Again, it's state government. We have to remember the wisdom of the founders. They have 3 branches of federal government. They're all now corrupt. Every one of them is illegitimate. None of them are to be respected. But we still have our state governments. Again, I'm a state legislator. You might think I'm biased, but Thomas Jefferson said states are the laboratories of democracy. We can end gerrymandering at the state level, even if we can't do it at the federal level. We can even have state compacts. The United States Senate, that's a more difficult problem. The United States Senate can't be changed under our U.S. Constitution. I don't have an easy way out there. Some have suggested, and this is a way out, California, for example, could split into 2 or 3 states. We would need a Democratic Congress to accept this and Californians to accept this. That might help, although, you know, Republicans could then split up Texas. That's something we could do. It's kind of messy, but it would give us more equality in the Senate. What about the Supreme Court? And this is the heart of the question post-Kavanaugh, right? What can we do about the United States Supreme Court? How can we reform the United States Supreme Court so it actually represents fairly the American people? It's a fair question. I'll give you my proposal right after the break. 888-488-6275. 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back right after this.
Never confuse Mark Levine with right-winger Mark Levin. The second E stands for empathy, which the other Mark lacks. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Just a few minutes left. I do want to get to how I've talked about how I would reform the Electoral College and the presidential election system, how I'd reform Congress through gerrymandering and maybe even fix the Senate a little bit. Now the Supreme Court. Lots of people know that the United States Constitution does not set a number of justices on the U.S. Supreme Court. Famously, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when the U.S. Supreme Court was outlawing a lot of his New Deal legislation that was necessary to get our country out of the Great Depression, he started what they called his court packing scheme. He was going to increase the number of judges on the Supreme Court. He was going to have an age limit to get rid of those old judges and put in new judges. And while no one suggested it was illegal, because you're right, Congress can set the number of justices and their terms and all of that, it was considered an overreach of power. But one of the justices changed their mind, and it's famously called a switch in time that saved nine, because that justice started voting Roosevelt's way, and then he didn't have to pack the court. We could. Democrats could increase the court to 11. We could do that. And then Republicans, if they got in power, might increase it to 13 and then 15, and then it just gets to be crazy. I think the fairer way to do it, that would still solve our problem with the injustice done to Merrick Garland and to Barack Obama, would to give each justice 18-year terms. There are nine justices. And this way, every president would appoint a new justice in the summer of every odd-numbered year. And that means that every single presidential term would have two justices, no more, no less. Well, you could have more if someone died, but other than that, no more, no less. And with 18-year terms, people are less likely to die in office. So, yes, we would lose Ginsburg and Breyer with a new Democratic president, but we'd get those two, and we'd get rid of Thomas, too. We would have a 5-4 majority in the court. But more importantly, it wouldn't be the craziness of who dies that determines our constitutional future. The American people would elect their president. Again, we should do it by popular vote. And then the president would decide. And then we could get back to a system whereby the Supreme Court justices reflect the Democratic polity. And frankly, I don't think the Supreme Court, we could throw in that law. The Senate does not have a right not to consider a justice. Outlaw what McConnell did. I only got a minute left. I'm going to very quickly go to Randy in Weekewashee, Florida, line two. Randy, you got to be real quick because we're running out of time.
Okay, Mark, real quick. Several things, but basically, I have a lot of friends that are conservatives, and they basically think that things will be self-regulating. If you do something wrong, eventually it'll catch up with you.
Yeah, that's not true. One of the things we've learned
I know it's not true.
Right.
It's a misunderstanding of they think that, you know, Adam Smith's free market will take care of everything, but they misunderstand it.
Right. No, thanks for your call. I'm sorry I don't have more time. You can call in tomorrow, by the way. I got a special show tomorrow. So tune in. If Randy, you can call in then. Reggie as well. I'll have more time. Things do not self-regulate. It's only we, the people, by taking back our country that we can regulate. To prove it, we have an illegitimate government at all three levels: Congress, the president, and the Supreme Court. But you, the people, we, the people, by voting in supermajorities in November, can get our country back.